For most of my life, I've been self-conscious about the appearance of my inner labia. It didn't come out of nowhere. I think I first noticed that I was unique when I was 13 and saw my first porn scenes. The women there looked different from me. Still, I didn't feel uncomfortable until I was 16 and my first boyfriend made a hurtful comment. "What's wrong with your pussy?" he sneered and giggled to himself. That was all it took for me to develop a complex. That relationship, thankfully, didn't last very long. But the embarrassment and insecurity remained. I didn't seek out new boyfriends or sexual partners for the rest of high school. I didn't say anything to my mother, who'd noticed that I'd grown depressed and self-conscious. And all I did was hate myself and wish I could change. Loneliness took a toll. My first year of college, I became that girl who drinks too much. It wasn't long before I was that girl who drinks too much and brings home random guys every weekend. See, drinking helps with my insecurity, and the random guys help me with my loneliness. When I think back on that time, I realize I was lucky. The worst physical harm that came to me was a pregnancy scare that turned out to be nothing. Emotionally, though, the damage added up. Frat boys, in case you're unaware, aren't known for their respect of women and their bodies. At least half my partners made some off-color remark about my vulva. Most of the comments were couched in some kind of joke. Some were outright insulting. The worst one was a boy who started going down on me and exclaimed, I quote, I got a fetish for chicks with big fucked up pussies. I remember crying as he brought me to orgasm. Associating misery with intimacy was the only thing that stopped my drunken one-nighter. Didn't stop my drinking, though. See, on the contrary, I remained in my dorm room and I drank alone, hating my body and myself. My grades slipped. The few friends I'd developed evaporated. Even my roommate, Amanda, who'd been the only consistent positive influence in my life up to that point, barely came by anymore. She spent all of her time at her boyfriend's dorm. I figured that she couldn't deal with me being depressed all the time. One night before Christmas, I was drunk in the room when someone knocked on my door. They staggered over and I opened it. One of the frat boys that I'd been with earlier in the semester. I couldn't remember if he'd been decent to me or not. It didn't really matter. He wanted to know if I was interested in hooking up. I wasn't. I didn't tell him no. He came in the room and got on top of me. I passed out. I woke up sometime later to the sound of tinny laughter coming from somewhere around me. I cracked open my eyes. The room spun. I was still terribly intoxicated. The laughter continued. It was coming from in front of me, and I tried to focus on the shape a few feet away. It was the boy. He was kneeling on the bed, pulling my right leg to the side with one hand. His phone was in the other, aimed at my crotch. More laughter. I realized he was FaceTiming with his frat buddies. I gasped. I kicked him. He laughed and jumped out and ran out of the room. I felt nauseous. And violated. Rightfully, I might add, but at the same time, my indignation was dwarfed by my sense of shame. Shame and self-loathing. I'm not going to blame what happened next on the effect of the alcohol still coursing through my system. I'm not even going to blame what happened next on what that one boy had done to me. But what happened next is the culmination of years of abuse, subsequent self-hatred, depression, and insecurity. I took a pair of scissors from Amanda's desk drawer. She was the one who found me later that morning. The sheets were drenched in blood. My hands were covered. The scissors were coated. I was in the hospital for a month. I'll make a long story short. I'd completely excised my inner labia. 80% of my clitoris had been sliced off. My urethral opening had been inadvertently punctured. I had, for all intents and purposes, destroyed my external genitalia. My physical recovery was painful and fraught with complications. The scissors had not been sharp. The cuts were ragged and difficult to stitch. I developed a severe infection that kept me in the hospital for another 2 weeks. That was probably a blessing in disguise. It meant more time for therapy. And eventually, the physical wounds started to heal. The therapy helped me come to terms with my drinking problem, and along with the help of antidepressants, my body image. I moved back in with my mom in late January. I wouldn't ever return to that college again. The next 5 years were spent working as a barista at Starbucks. Never home. I developed a routine I was comfortable with and even made a friend or two. And I had frequent nightmares about my experiences at school, but I'd done significant work with my therapist on how to move beyond them. What I couldn't move beyond was the damage I'd done to myself. The effect of the scissors, emergency surgery, and stitches. But there was a lot of scar tissue. I had next to no sensation in my groin, and to me, it was even uglier than it had been before the incident. I discussed this with my therapist, and she told me plastic surgery could likely help me, and assured me that in time, I would find a partner who would love me for who I am. And logically, I knew she was right. But my emotional side knew that it would take a very, very long time. I could not afford that kind of surgery. My health insurance barely covered my therapy. If I hadn't been under my mom's insurance when I harmed myself, God only knew what would have ended up happening. I began running out of outlets. Before I disfigured myself, I could at least blow off steam at the end of a rough day by having a big meal or masturbating, but I was terrified of gaining weight and becoming even more unattractive, and masturbation was out of the question. I had no hobbies, no direction, and nothing except my routine and my therapy, the latter growing less successful every day. A couple months ago, I was at work, mindlessly serving coffees and pastries when I saw a familiar face in line. I almost jumped for joy. It was Amanda. I hadn't seen her since she'd visited me in the hospital. We texted frequently, but since she lived on the other side of the state, I'd never expected to see her. I informed my boss that I needed to take my break and sat at a table with my former roommate. We chatted pleasantly, albeit mostly small talk. She seemed reluctant to ask me my personal questions. It felt like she didn't know how much I could emotionally handle. Instead, Amanda veered the conversation to a strange avenue. She began talking about her religion. Now, I never knew Amanda to be a religious person. Not at all, in fact. This is a side of her I never expected to see. It's not like a religion, Amanda informed me. It's more like a sense of oneness with nature that allows you to bring change where change is needed. I nodded. It sounded a little new agey for my taste, but at least she wasn't telling me about the plight of unborn babies. Amanda continued. The last time our group met, I told them what happened to you. I mentioned how you endured so much pain and how it's going to affect you for the rest of your life. I felt a flash of violation, but I squashed it. I was sure Amanda hadn't told them about me personally, just about the incident. She confirmed that a second later. I didn't give them any specifics like your name, that you were my roommate, but I did say that you were very, very close to me, and because that's important in how we help change things. Now, what do you mean, change? I asked. Well, hopefully, I mean fix, replied Amanda. I have something for you. She reached into her handbag and produced a jar of what looked like lotion. We bless this. That blessing imbued it with a catalyst for change. I eyed the jar. It really did look like lotion. I opened it and sniffed it. It was lotion. Cetaphil, I think. Man, what am I supposed to do with this? Oh, you apply it to your injury every night. You just do that and things will be back to normal. Things will be good for you again. I stared into her eyes. I could tell she meant what she was saying. My boss called over to our table and reminded me that my break had ended 5 minutes ago. Trust me, Amanda whispered, and text me if you have any questions, but I don't think you will. She got up and embraced me, and then she left. I finished the workday, obsessing over the small jar in my apron pocket. When my shift ended, I hurried home. I ate dinner with my mother, who remarked that I looked happier than I had in a while. I told her I'd seen Amanda, and I didn't tell her what she'd given me. Later that night, I showered, and I got ready for bed. Before I got into my pajamas, I opened the jar from Amanda. I smelled it again. I compared it to the bottle of lotion on my bedside. The scents were identical. I sighed. I felt stupid for getting my hopes up. Still, I did as Amanda had instructed, scooped a fingerful of lotion from the jar, and I let it warm. I spread it over my hard, rubbery scar tissue that composed the remains of my vulva. Get dressed. Turned off the lights. And I went to sleep. I woke up before dawn with a gasp. I had sensation, a tingly, prickly wave that ran up and down my scarred flesh. It wasn't painful or pleasurable, but it was something. Something after years of absolutely nothing. Days passed. I continued with Amanda's treatment cycle, and each day brought new sensations and something I didn't believe until I used a hand mirror to study myself. A diminishment of scar tissue. It was like new skin was growing. It was red and soft and puffy and entirely different from the leathery remains of my butchery. The recovery wasn't my imagination. Subsequent applications yielded more results. Before too long, I had feeling in my genitals. I masturbated for the first time in years, and it felt like a shroud had been lifted from me. I was almost a real person again. I say almost because despite the regaining of sensations and the beginnings of growth, the appearance of my crotch was still abnormal. It still looked like I'd been in an accident. The scar tissue was gone, but the marks were still there. My clitoris was still a tiny stump compared to its former self. Those aspects still kept me self-conscious and nervous. Too nervous to seek out a relationship. After a month and a half, I used up all of the lotion. The appearance of my vulva had improved, but I still had some old feelings of discomfort and uncertainty, and I texted Amanda to give her the last update, and she responded with kindness and enthusiasm. She was so happy to be able to help me and said to my relief that the effects of the lotion would persist until everything was back to how it had been. The news was bittersweet. A lot of me did want to return to normalcy after years of disfigurement, still in my insecurity. I had wished that I could be transformed into what I had idolized. The woman in the porn scenes that I'd seen when I was a kid, the type of woman the boys at college had wanted me to be. Not the ones that they laughed at. True to her word, after another few weeks, my vulva had returned to its original state. My clitoris was large and protrusive, my inner labia stuck out, rubbed uncomfortably against my underwear when I walked. I was me again, for better or worse. I wondered if the treatment had been worth it. Life went as typical as I could have expected for a little while. I was too nervous to ask out a boy I liked at Starbucks. Not because I was worried about my disfigurement, but because I was worried about how he'd react to my normal, healthy body. I knew how perverse my thinking was in that aspect. That knowledge did nothing to help my self-esteem. I'd walked home alone every day, feeling my labia chafe against my underwear like they'd done for a long time in the past. Pain, though, seemed a little harder to ignore. One night, I was sitting on the toilet after dinner. I felt a terrible, icy cold jolt rush through me. I jumped up, nearly falling to the floor. Water was dripping off my lips. My eyes widened, my labia were long, but they'd never dangled so far as to land in the toilet. I tore off some toilet paper, I wiped the water away, then examined myself. My labia looked stretched and thicker than normal. All the walking and chafing must have caused some swelling. I sighed and dressed, then snuck down to the kitchen for an ice pack. I slept with it tucked between my legs. In the morning, when I took a shower, I checked the swelling. It hadn't gone down. In fact, it had gotten worse. My labia dangled halfway down my thighs. In a panic, I jumped out of the shower and texted Amanda. "Amanda, there's something wrong. Everything's bigger. What do I do?" "What do you mean?" "Bigger. My lips are bigger than ever. What's going on?" There was a pause for 5 minutes before her response. "Don't worry about it. It'll be back to normal. Bye." "What? What? When?" The message hung in space for about a minute, then returned as not delivered. I tried again. Same message. I started to cry. I didn't know what was happening to me. I glanced at the clock. I was late for work. I struggled into my clothes and took off running. The pain of every step was almost unbearable. Everything at work was the worst. The customers were rude. The orders were long and complicated. The other baristas had called out. I was alone with the manager, and he was in a wretched mood because of my lateness, and all the while, I was in pain. My crotch felt like it was on fire. Pressure was building up against my underwear with every move I made, and it took every ounce of my emotional fortitude to not burst into tears. Finally, when there was a break in the action, I excused myself to use the restroom. entered the room, I locked the door, and I pulled down my pants, and I screamed so loudly I felt something tear inside my throat. My labia had been stuck to the inside of my underwear, and as I pulled them down, they unfurled to my shins. Each one was as thick as my hand, and I shrieked again and stumbled sideways, cracking my head on the toilet. Everything spun just like it had done that fateful day when I discovered the boy recording me with his friends, and this time it was different. I heard someone pounding on the door and yelling, asking if I was okay. I moaned in pain and fear, and I felt a cold and slippery sensation. In my dazed state, I watched as my labia lengthened before my eyes, sliding against the floor and bunching up in the corner, and the door swung open. It was my manager with a key. He took one look at me and he fainted. The tangle of angry pink flesh on the floor grew and grew, and customers rushed to see what was happening, and one by one they disappeared back around the corner, wide-eyed, gagging or shouting, and the last thing I remember before I joined the manager in unconsciousness was the piled flesh in the corner reaching the ceiling and toppling over and covering me. Now, today I write this from my hospital bed. Growth has not stopped. Every few minutes, a surgeon removes what appears to be 10 feet of thick, heavy skin from the floor at the foot of my bed. I'm flying high on a combination of painkillers and adrenaline. No one knows what's happening to me. None of this should be happening to me. The hospital had my mother bring the empty lotion jar to the labs for analysis, but they could find nothing abnormal. Just lotion. I know the truth. It's something I doubt any lab could detect. A nice blonde doctor just removed another chunk of my labia. That chunk looked much longer than the last one, maybe 20 feet. I tried to notice when he snuck his phone out of his pocket to take a picture. I know whoever's going to get that photo won't laugh at what they see. They'll be horrified, sure. But they won't be laughing. They won't be mocking. And I guess, somehow, that's better than what I'm used to.
Hey there, everyone who's listening on YouTube, or those of you who are listening on the podcast. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta. And before you head out for the night, I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things. Without you, the show doesn't take place. So, if you guys would like to support the show, or if you guys would like to get your hands on a couple of cool little things whenever new things come out, check out patreon.com/MrCreepyPasta, and any support that you guys show, I really appreciate. For everyone who's already donated to the Patreon, I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. I thank you so much for that. If you guys are looking for more Creepypasta Storytime, there's a new video that's uploaded to this channel or uploaded to the podcast every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday now. You can be able to get more from me at facebook.com/MrCreepyPasta or on Twitter at MrCreepyPasta and then the number 0. Thanks so much for listening, kids, and for your support.
And sweet dreams.